Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with a COVID name that isn't about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bick Nizar. With me is the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, an eventful morning so far. You were in on the call with Jim Benning. We'll get to all that as well, but how's it going so far this morning for you?
Yeah, very good. Exciting to have so much hockey-related news to discuss with Jim Benning's media availability this morning, and then, of course, the big announcement with Gary Bettman yesterday and a formal confirmation of the return-to-play format and knowledge that, you know, barring things going completely sideways, which, of course, is still possible because, as we know, over the last couple of months, it seems like almost anything is possible. But barring that, we will see the Canucks and the Minnesota Wild in a five-game series likely in late July and early August. And so we can start getting fired up and excited about that.
Yeah, yesterday's announcement that came right after our show with the Commissioner Gary Bettman, a lot of it was, okay, it's very encouraging, obviously, and it's right to be optimistic about if the steps go as planned and you get to phase three, you get to phase four, and games are being played, then, okay, we can get still really getting excited about everything. But Gary Bettman did a good job yesterday of illustrating and highlighting repeatedly that, like, this is still a government and health authorities mandate. When they give the go-ahead, the leagues will be ready. That's, like, to me, that was a big takeaway from yesterday, is the league is ready to go when they get the green light.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at how Commissioner Bettman handled that yesterday, and I'll be honest, I think that might be one of his finest moments as the commissioner of the National Hockey League, because there was a ton of complex information that he had to convey, and he did it in a way that made sense and didn't have me scratching my head going, okay, so how's this draft lottery going to work? And then I thought he also hit the right tones in terms of, you know, making sure that it's clear that they want to return when it's safe to do so in places where the local authorities are ready to have them come play, and in a way that will make it as safe as is possible for players and staff that are going to be on site. So, you know, that was encouraging to see. I know we talked yesterday or a couple days ago about that 22-page document the NHL put out and how thorough it was. You know, for my money, the NHL has handled this week about as well as they could have. And now we can get into some of the minutiae, the excitement around the fact that we expect things to start ramping up next week or the week after with the beginning of phase two and players being able to get back on the ice in their individual cities.
I can tell I'm getting older when I have a deep respect and appreciation for some of the job Gary Bettman is doing. You know, in your age, you just get a little bit wiser and you realize the steps that this undertaking is, and you just look at it and you're like, man, the monumental task that he is doing is and shining in it is that I'm sure a lot of fans, and I know myself, I just say, like, sometimes having the smartest person in the room really helps in moments like this.
Yeah. And, you know, we look at some of the things he announced yesterday. I know there were some people that sort of thought the draft lottery format is weird. I absolutely love it because it could bring about utter chaos. And we'll get into this later in the week, I'm sure. But yeah, there is a scenario, and a real scenario, where the Canucks could be playing a playoff series against the Minnesota Wild while also having the knowledge that if they lose said playoff series, they would have a 37.5% chance of a top three pick. Now, that is a number of balls having to roll in their favor, a number of things that probably won't happen having to happen. But nonetheless, the fact that we could be living in a world where that is reality, to me, is awesome and hilarious, and it will certainly make for some heated discussion on these airwaves over the next few months.
I got some people asking me, like, well, why is there two different draws? I think the important thing here to remember is, like, this is also that's also two chances to get on TV for the league, right? And it's generating more content, and this is all about – and revenue regeneration, as much as the league can claim, as Gary did yesterday, that, you know, this isn't about the economics of the league. This is about, you know, completing the season. it's tough to say that in the next breath, say, oh yeah, we want fans in the seats for next season. Like, that's an economic driver. So it's an opportunity to create more content, create more eyes. You see the TV ratings for the Bundesliga, which is up 300% for Fox Sports down south. If you get out in front of a camera and you provide some content, you're going to draw eyes to your sport. And so having two draws, should it come to fruition that one of the placeholder teams wins one of the three spots, it's going to drive so much content if one of those eight teams gets in.
Or what if all three of those spots are placeholder teams? And that's the scenario I'm talking about, where we know that three of the eight teams that are going to be eliminated in the playoffs will have the top three picks. Now, again, the math for the likelihood of that happening is so small that it's not going to happen. But what if
the door is open for it to happen?
Yeah, what if it did? Like, that's the part that I'm sort of enjoying speculating about. And, you know, you could have a scenario where, like, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Edmonton Oilers, and the Carolina Hurricanes are picking 1, 2, 3, and those are teams that would have been playoff teams if things had gone normally. So, you know, we'll get into the details of that closer to the time, just under a month away from when they do phase one of that draft lottery. So we can speculate on it till then, and then we'll see whether any of those placeholder teams do move up high enough to have one of those top three picks.
Okay, so it is Bicknazar, Brendan Batchelor on Social Distance Central and Sportsnet 650. Yes. So earlier today, about 90 minutes ago, Jim Benning did meet with media, and also should say he will join Randeep Janda, Dan Riccio, and Reach Deep exclusively on Sportsnet 650. So that's coming up at 1 o'clock. But just some takeaways for you from what took place earlier today.
Yeah, the most interesting thing for me from the call with Jim Benning was the fact that he admitted that the organization, and it's still very early and lots can change before we get to phase three in training camps, but that they have discussed and may explore holding their training camp in the United States. And the reasoning for that being the 14-day quarantine that is still in place by the federal government in Canada, but that the American President Donald Trump has agreed to waive for professional sports athletes returning. So, you know, this would be a logistical issue for the Canucks, whereby, you know, Elias Pettersson, Jacob Markstrom are back overseas in Sweden. They would have to come to Canada and then isolate for 14 days. So they wouldn't be able to take part in phase two that's going to be starting in the next couple of weeks with the groups of six skaters on the ice at Rogers Arena. They wouldn't be able to get into the team gym facility. They would have to just stay at home for 2 weeks. And, you know, understanding the government of Canada's position, and I'm fully in favor of that 14-day quarantine remaining in place, I should say. The health of the public is of higher priority than whether the hockey games that all of us are going to be watching on TV anyway happen to be played in our city or not. The fact of the matter is, you know, the government and Bonnie Henry spoke about it from a British Columbia perspective yesterday. They're not going to make any exceptions that could put the population at risk, and I think they should be commended for that. But you also understand the Canucks exploring their options and saying, okay, well, you know, not only do we have players overseas, you know, Travis Green has been in the United States for most of this time. I believe he's still down in California, so that 14-day quarantine period would apply to him as well if he were to come back. I understand them trying to explore finding somewhere to do a camp in the United States, just because the logistics of getting those guys back over and back up to speed make more sense. Is it the safest thing that they could do? Probably not. But at the same time, if they're working within a limited time frame that the NHL is going to provide them, you understand that they might be you know, having to explore other options than holding their training camp in Vancouver.
Well, the thing about it is, if they're isolated, that safety, like, I understand the travel concerns, but, you know, we're talking about them just being separated from society to some degree. If they're doing it in an offsite location that isn't in Vancouver, like, that's them being isolated. So the getting there might not be as safe, but being there would be safe.
Well, the only thing that you would be risking at that point is, you know, let's say one of the Canucks players from Sweden returns and he has COVID-19, and then he passes it to all of his Canucks teammates. Whereas had he returned and quarantined for 14 days, it would have passed and then he wouldn't be passing it to his teammates. You would assume that in this scenario, if they're going to hold a training camp in the U.S., that those guys will come back and almost immediately be on the ice with their teammates. So there's a greater risk of the players within that, for the players within that bubble. But you're right. For the most part, we're expecting all these players to be quarantined away from the rest of society, potentially with their families, potentially without. So it's not something that should impact, you know, the greater public, mm-hmm. but doing it that way in the U.S. does add an added element of risk that your own players could contract COVID-19.
And that it does feel like a logical process too, as far as what we heard yesterday with Elliot Friedman joining us on the program at with Andrew Walker and Sat Shaw, just from the league standpoint, that they've been given more flexibility from the U.S. government than Canada. And again, that's all well and good from the Canadian government standpoint to do that. It just, if they wanted to facilitate the return of sports, the league itself is more likely to return to the United States. And so if you're the teams themselves, how does that work, right? It just filters down of that whole facilitation process. The same logic would apply from the league standpoint to the teams as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we assume that the Canadian government is not going to budge on this 14-day quarantine, then the Canucks are going to be going to the U.S. anyway. So why not, you know, do that a few weeks earlier than you would have to otherwise, get to a spot where you're not as restricted in having all your players there and on the ice, and get your training camp going. And, you know, again, as I said, like, I commend the Canadian government. I think that the stance they've taken is the correct one. And when it comes down to it, you know, people listening might be disappointed that, oh, the Canucks aren't going to be holding training camp in Vancouver, or they probably won't be playing games at Rogers Arena if this stands. Well, you know what? Again, you're not going to be able to go. Like, it's not like your front row tickets are going to be any good.
Right.
Everybody's going to be watching this on TV. So does it matter where these games are played? I mean, you know, if you look at it from a player safety issue, somewhere like British Columbia with the lower rate of COVID-19, it would be safer for the players to play here. But that's a league decision that's going to be made. And if the league is going to take its services south of the border because things are more flexible for them there and it'll be easier to operate, then, you know, that's the way it's going to be. The Canucks are going to have to, you know, follow in line with that. And, you know, whether they hold their training camp south of the border a few weeks early when they're going to be going there to play games anyway, it probably doesn't matter either way.
The other takeaways from Jim Binning's conference call earlier, and again, he's going to talk to Reach Deep at 1 o'clock here on Sportsnet 650. As we get ready for what could be a playoff series versus the Minnesota Wild, rosters is becoming a topic of conversation. So who's healthy, who's not? We'll play a couple of clips from you. This is Jim Binning talking about the health and the status of two forwards, Josh Levo and Michael Ferland.
They're both are doing therapy, physical therapy, you know, and their rehab to come back. As we get closer to the date, we'll have to see where they're at and, you know, make that determination then if they're able to play or not. But, you know, I've had positive reports, but we'll just have to see as we get closer to playing.
So it's still some time away back, obviously, potentially July and August, and that gives those two guys more recovery time. The one I think people are more encouraged about is Josh Levo, just because it's been some time. I think there's just general concern and reticence when it comes to Michael Ferland of, okay, he was rushed back last time. The more time he sits is probably just better for everyone. It's hard to project 2 months from now, but when it comes to Josh Levo, like, again, positive steps, and that's someone that's encouraging that he could be available come July and August.
Yeah, it certainly is. Although you look at the fact that if Jim Benning's talking about Josh Levo's injury in those sort of words, that they're still not sure, they're going through physical therapy, that means that this injury was a lot longer of a term than we thought it would be for Josh Levo. Because initially, when he went out, there was some thought that he would be back for the first round of the playoffs when they would have regularly occurred back in early April. And the fact that they're not willing to give him 100% clean bill of health makes me think that this has been a slower healing process for him than initially was expected. But you're right. He's had a lot more time to rest, a lot more time to heal, time to get in physio work with the Canucks staff, or there will be that opportunity for him to do that going forward here once we enter phase two. You know, that's encouraging that you think there's probably a pretty good chance that he will be able to play once we get into late July and August when the games start, and you hope that he would be a full participant in training camp as well. But at the same time, it makes another tough decision for Travis Green and his coaching staff, which is a good problem to have, that you've got another guy that you feel could fit into your top nine and be a good contributor back and available to play again. And, you know, we talked about it a lot in training camp before the start of this regular season, and I'm sure it's going to be a topic of conversation again as they get into this second training camp to ramp up for the play-in round. That one thing the Canucks are going to have, especially at the forward position, is a ton of competition for ice time and for opportunity to play in those games. And Josh Levo fits into that mix. And then maybe Michael Ferland would as well. But, you know, I agree with what you were saying earlier, that especially when it comes to repeated concussions, you hope that they are being as slow and as careful as they possibly can be with a player like him, because I know I speak for myself and a lot of people in the Canuck fan base, and I'm sure lots of people within the Canuck organization as well, that you don't want this guy to try to come back and risk his long-term quality of life to do so.
Absolutely. And now the one, the other big takeaway, I think that everyone has been talking about for, man, it feels like, you know, Sat's been talking about this since January. I mean, even going back to pre-draft last year. Obviously, it comes down with we're talking about director of scouting, Judd Brackett. And, you know, part of the confusion of this stoppage for the for the league has been, okay, contracts end on June 30th for a lot of hockey ops staff, a lot of the scouting staff. What happens now? Jim Banning did touch on what happens with the hockey ops staff and, of course, Judd Brackett as well.
We have a hockey ops call today, conference call at 1 o'clock. We'll be talking about some of those issues. And as far as like Judd's personal position, it's like the players. I don't comment on, you know, negotiations when we're signing players, and I'm not going to do it with a staff member. So, but we have, you know, like I said, we have a conference scheduled for later today. We're going to talk about some of these things now that we have, you know, all the information as to when they're just going to be and stuff, and we'll be making decisions, you know, based on our conversations in the next few days.
A predictable statement there from Jim, just kind of borderlining no commenting, obviously.
Yeah.
But it just does go show that, you know, this is going to continue basically till we get a resolution.
Yeah, and when that is will be key, because if, you know, Judd Brackett is allowed to leave the organization when his contract concludes at the end of June, that means that he will not be a part of the fold for the entry draft whenever it ends up being held, October, November, who knows at this point, depending on when they get back and start playing games and when they can award a Stanley Cup. But also it means that he could then theoretically go and sign with another NHL club, mm-hmm. and, you know, essentially give away the Canucks draft playbook to a competing team. Now, you know, is that something that will happen or could happen? It's hard to say, although it does look like, and we've talked about this a lot, that this whole situation has been trending towards these two sides going their separate ways. But when they go their separate ways, if indeed that is going to be the result, could be very key here. And then also, if Judd Brackett does leave, there's the added element that the Canucks would then need to fill the vacant role of the director of scouting and do it, you know, with relative haste if they want to have someone in place before the draft in a few months.
Yeah, I did kind of find it strange that it was, you know, I get he's well within his rights to no comment, but, you know, to Zesh, you're not going to talk about it publicly, I mean, he's on record talking to Ian McIntyre, just saying that recently that they offered Judd a contract and he rejected it, right? So that's talking about it publicly, and that was earlier this month. So again, this is a topic that's going to evolve and continue to be discussed about. And it is one of the points that we talk about too when it comes to the conversation regarding Jim Banning is he deserves some of the credit. Obviously, Judd's on the staff, and that's how the world works, right? Things filter uphill. Credit filters uphill. So he gets some of the credit for being part of the staff that has picked some of the players people are so excited about. And people are excited about Judd Brackett, and they want to see him retained in his role, but that goes under the ledger of, you know, how Jim Benning runs his staff. And that's why we're opening the conversation to the listeners this week for Game of Takes, where we're inviting people to send in their takes on their view of Jim Benning's tenure. So you can text in your thoughts, 650-650. You can jump on Twitter. You can talk to Batch at Batch Hockey, at Bix650, myself, or at Sportsnet650. And what we're going to do... very shortly, oh, there we go. Here's some tunes for it. Very shortly, we are going to reach out to two people, and we're going to be airing your thoughts tomorrow for who's going to be the who's going to sit on the Canucks throne for Game of Takes.
Yeah, looking forward to it, and you know, this is your last chance because we are going to be you know, combing through the submissions this afternoon and contacting people to have an opportunity to be a part of the show tomorrow. So let us know what you think about Jim Benning and the job he's done. Certainly the Judd Brackett conversation is front of mind right now, so that might play into the way you feel about the general manager, whether you think he hasn't done a great job during his six-year tenure, whether you think that, you know, the draft picks of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes are such that he does deserve to be credited with doing a good job. Whatever your opinion is, let us know. 650-650 on the text line, at Batch Hockey, at Bix650, at Sportsnet650 on Twitter, and you could be on the air giving your take on Jim Benning at this time tomorrow.
And I think when we select our winner, are we bringing our winner back on Friday?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have an opportunity for you to give your take tomorrow. Then we'll put it out to you, the listeners, to vote on who had the stronger argument. And then we'll pick a winner on Friday, have them back on the show, and then they're going to be the reigning champ that will continue into Game of Takes next week and defend their crown when we pick a new topic for people to give their opinion about.
So excited for this. Okay, a lot to dig into. We're going to be joined by Mike Zygomanis today. Missed it on Monday, but he'll join us today. Obviously, the return to play for the NHL, a huge story across the league based off of yesterday's announcement from Commissioner Bettman. So we'll get into that with him, just from a player's mindset, what to be ready for. That's all coming up here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650.
How long has it been? Shall we get kind of since they made that coaching change, they, you know, have showed up and they're competing hard every night and they're playing good defensively, and I think Dean Evason's done a good job with that group. And, you know, so they got experienced team, experienced guys. You know, they got their top 4D is really good. They moved the puck out of their end. So I think it should be a fast, skilled, well-played series.
Vancouver Canucks general manager Jim Benning speaking to media earlier today on a Zoom call, fresh off of the announcement yesterday with Gary Bettman, talking about the return to play format for the play-in and the playoffs and the draft lottery. We'll touch on most of that with Mike Zygomanis in just a couple of minutes here. But, you know, just quickly on him touching on the Minnesota Wild, one thing that he didn't mention there is how quickly they moved the puck out of the back end. We talked a bit about it yesterday, just how solid that top 4D-man is of Spurgeon, Suter, Dumba, and Brodin. And, you know, we were talking more from the defensive point of view. I mean, there's the other side of the aspect. Is they're all four really clever, really slick players with the puck. And that is one of the challenges that they do present if this playoff series does come to fruition in the summer.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, that's something that we'll dig into in a lot more detail as we get closer. But, you know, looking at the way this series would match up, you have to give the edge, even though the Canucks have Quinn Hughes, you do have to give the edge on the blue line to the Minnesota Wild, and they are good at transitioning the puck. Now, you know, are they one of the top scoring teams in the league? They're, you know, in the top half of the league in terms of goals for, but in terms of like high level difference makers offensively, you'd have to give the edge to the Canucks with guys like, you know, Elias Pettersson and Bo Horvat, Brock Besser, Tyler Toffoli, whoever you want to include in that conversation. So yeah, that Minnesota defense will be good at transitioning the puck. The question is, once they get it up to the forwards, how effective will they be, especially if Jacob Markstrom comes back in really strong form?
It's certainly the series we're going to be keeping an eye on, but there's seven others that I'm sure pique the interest of many other people. We'll get into that with Mike Zygomanis right now, longtime NHLer, 7 years in the league. And also, you can listen to him on the Fan 590, our sister station, obviously, in Toronto. Mike, thanks a lot for giving some time here. Of the eight series, which ones stand out to you that look like they can be the most fascinating?
Well, Toronto and Columbus obviously is the one we've been talking about all day today. That's going to be the big test for them, and something where we're kind of discussing. Hopefully, the layoff's going to help the Leafs and their offensive-minded team, and a team like Columbus, who's been a good defensive team all year. Hopefully, they just can't get their feet under them and, you know, kind of a step slow maybe to start this playoff. And it's going to be really interesting to see which teams can get back to form the quickest, because as of right now, with so many unknowns, we really just don't know how much time teams are going to be given for training camps, these small group workouts. We don't know how long those are going to last, how much the coaching staff's going to be allowed around the guys to prepare. So with so many things in the air, yeah, we really just don't know how well prepared these teams can get, you know, back to their form that they were during the regular season.
It's funny too, because it's not round one, but it's the makeshift round one, right? And so the Leafs don't get to play Boston, but here's a team that was the giant killers from last year taking on Columbus. I'm just curious, from the Leafs point of view, or the Leafs fan base at least, is this a favorable matchup, or is this one that you kind of look at and be like, man, when Columbus is going structurally, they're so good, and that seems to be what flummoxes Toronto the most?
Well, we looked at all the matchups today when we were discussing this morning on 590, and we're kind of going through and which team was a favorite to win. Maybe a couple, I'd say maybe a Pittsburgh, but any of the lower seeded teams, if you look at, you know, the Rangers, the Panthers, the Blue Jackets, they can all beat the Hurricanes, Islanders, and Leafs. And even the Rangers, I believe they're undefeated against Carolina this year. So that's in the East. And then in the West, I mean, Predators, Coyotes, I could go either way. Canucks, Wild. I mean, the Canucks have had a great season, sitting in seventh right now, but that Minnesota Wild team could do some damage. And then Calgary, Winnipeg, I really, it's a coin flip for me as well. The Oilers Blackhawks is an interesting matchup, but just going through breaking down all these series, I really don't have any clear-cut favorites to win any of them, so that's going to be exciting. And I like this 24 team format. It gives a chance to some teams that were maybe on the bubble sniffing to get in the playoffs. It gives them a chance to actually get in the playoffs, because I believe that they're only calling this you know, a play-in series. So technically, these aren't the playoffs, apparently the NHL is calling them.
Former NHLer Mike Zygomanis with us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. And I want to try and, you know, get inside the minds of the players with all these announcements, and still certainly lots of work to be done before we get to phase four, where games are actually played. But, you know, obviously you played in the league. Do you have a feel for how players are feeling about not just the format, but the potential risk they might be putting themselves in to come back and play and be back around their teammates? Is that something that do you think would concern players, or would concern you if you're still playing, or how do you think players are dealing with all of these issues right now?
Yeah, guys are concerned about coming back right now. That's no secret. I think well, the players are happy to come back and practice and play. Like that's the one side of it. You know, no one's questioning. But yeah, the health risks that right now there's so much unknown. And then there's the other side of it are players with families, right? If you're single, it's one thing to go into a hub city for, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, maybe a couple months. But if you've got the family and you have the kids, that's definitely a concern for a lot of guys. The players I talk to with families are going to go probably by themselves to start and then try to see if their families can join them later or how long they could last away from their families. Because you got to understand, some guys have, you know, newborns or kids that are not that old. And to be away for a couple months is tough. The other side of it is that there's going to be 8 teams that are going to be done in 10 days. And then, you know, it's going to be cut in half again after another 10 days. So you're not going to have all 24 teams away from their families for the whole duration of this play-in round and the playoffs. Yeah, I think guys are excited to be playing again. I know Columbus, Carolina and Tampa Bay didn't vote for the format and to get back to playing, but you know, 20 other teams are chomping at the bit to get back to it, and they're excited. We're excited on the air, me and Scotty Mac talking about it today, and you know, hopefully more details do emerge, because as of right now, I mean, this. All that's been really approved is the format and kind of identifying the phases. But I still kind of believe that it's a little bit a ways. It's, you know, I'm trying to stay optimistic, but at the same time, there's still so much unknown with the health risks and what the NHL is going to do with the protocols that I don't think it's a lock that we're actually going to start on July 1.
Well, and there's also an economic factor to this as well for the players. And, you know, some people listening might scoff at that and say they're millionaire athletes. But normally players are not paid to play in the playoffs, rather. And, you know, with the economic impact on the NHL, it's sure to have some sort of trickle down effect to the escrow as well. Do you think that's a concern among the players that maybe has been a little bit underreported, that there isn't exactly a great financial incentive for these guys to go back and play and put themselves and potentially their families at risk?
Yeah, that's definitely something to look at. In the playoffs, players aren't paid. There is a bonus check that you get for making it. And then if you lose in the first, second, third round, and then if you win the Stanley Cup, you get a little bit more money. It's not much compared to what most guys make during the year, but for a lot of guys, it's a big bonus check. And something that guys kind of rely on if you're one of these players making the league minimum, or if you're a call-up or a black ace. So the money is going to be there from what I'm hearing. There is going to still be the bonus checks. But yeah, it's one of those things where this is not Major League Baseball, where they're kind of fighting over, you know, docking pay from a lot of guys. And, you know, they're thinking of like a tier system where if you make the league minimum, it's what I believe you get 90% of a prorated salary. And then the percentage gets knocked off the higher, more money you make. So that's going to be interesting going into the following season, into 2021, where, yeah, players are going to be making less if there's no fans allowed in the arena. So that's definitely something to consider. I don't believe that's a big issue right now. If it is, it's being kept private from all of us, and they're not really leaking much information, unlike baseball, where it's been on the front page every day, and you see the owners and players kind of fighting over where they're at with player salaries and getting things prorated, because they're looking at a 50% schedule for this season. But yeah, I players are going to be expecting their regular bonus checks on depending on how far they make it. They know it's not a lot of money for a lot of guys for what they make during the season.
Mike Zigaman is showing us, former NHLer and now on the Fan 590. I do just want to circle back to you on something, though, just about the economics, though. Because I think the public views it as, well, players have money, they'll be fine. And we don't look at it from what is someone's identity, right? And when it comes to athletes, we I should say the fans at times remove the human element of it. And I don't think you can just ask people to be on pause, right? The idea of, is this rushing back too soon? Like, part of this is allowing people to get back to their own work and their own business. The NHL, for as much as it is a sport and everything, it's still a business. You have to allow people to get back to their own way of life, even if it does seem as inconsequential as sports and hockey.
Well, the thing about is it's not just the players, right? You've got coaching staff. I mean, they're getting paid, but there's arena staff. There's people that are working the merchandise tents, counters. You've got ushers in arenas. There's media that's not getting paid right now that are used to going and setting up, you know, trucks for the game. So there's so many different areas that aren't getting paid right now and aren't working, that it's for me, it's a bigger issue than just the players and just the owners not collecting revenue from the season. And that's mm-hmm. for me, that's the bigger issue. And I know a lot of teams are paying their full-time employees, especially MLSC. They've done a great job of making sure people are compensated. But yeah, people, you want to go into work. You want to feel like you're wanted and you're needed somewhere, and that's a big, you know, self-esteem and issue for a lot of people. And you know, we want to go to a place, and you know, a lot of people kind of, from my friends, even sitting at home every day, they miss going into their work environment with their friends, and it's definitely something where, you know, people are just sitting at home right now, and that's tough to do, right? And you know, I have other friends that are battling mental illness right now, just sitting at home and doing nothing, right? It's really tough. It's something a lot of people haven't gone through. We're still lucky we're all in the air, right? And we can, you know, we're still working. Me and Scotty Mac are actually, I don't know what you guys are doing, but we're still going into studio, keeping obviously a safe distance away from each other, but most hosts are doing it from home, and but yeah, no one's in the office right now, and it's such a strange time, and hopefully we can get back to some, you know, level of normalcy here in the near future.
And there's so many questions still to be answered around this. As you rightly point out, it does feel like there's a lot of work to be done before we actually get to the point where the puck is dropped and we're analyzing actual hockey games again. But one of the things that has still yet to be decided is the hub city issue. And we saw yesterday that Toronto, Edmonton, and Vancouver have all been shortlisted to potentially be hub cities. But Bill Daly came out yesterday and said that as long as the Canadian government has that 14-day quarantine period in place, that the NHL won't be in a position to come to Canada. Now, we're here in Vancouver, so we sort of have a feel for what people think about whether Rogers Arena here in Vancouver could host games. But I'm interested in the view of fans in Toronto about whether they would want the NHL to be played out of Scotiabank Arena, even though fans won't be able to go, or whether, like some of the people we're hearing from here in Vancouver, they're saying, you know what, if they want to go to the U.S., they can go to the U.S. We don't want to have any risk to people's health here in Canada.
I can't see it being a hub city in Canada from what I've heard so far. I think Vancouver and Toronto would both be first-class places. Vancouver's held the Olympics. Toronto's held the World Championship. So they have experience and they have the infrastructure and the setup to put on something like a hub city for the return of hockey. I'm also hearing Edmonton's being pushed really hard by by the Alberta government and the federal government. So I'm curious to see what they have in place for, you know, what they're kind of offering there. But like I said, Vancouver and Toronto, I think would offer great places to host, you know, their, you know, divisions and hub cities for the return to play. But at this time, it's most likely looking like it's going to go to the U.S. Just, I guess, that 14-day quarantine is something the NHL isn't looking to kind of entertain. And we had Bill Daly on our show this morning, and those were his kind of concerns, although he wasn't ruling out any of the Canadian cities, but it's one of those things where we try to get a little bit more out of him, but he didn't really budge on answering the question about where play would resume.
7-year NHLer Mike Zigoman is joining the show. Social Distance Central, Vic Nizar, and Brendan Batcher. I'm curious, in your conversations with players that are, you know, getting ready to return to play, has there been, you know, mixed replies on how active guys are staying right now, or guys just all ready to go as soon as they can?
Well, Austin Matthews and Freddie Anderson were playing you know, basketball off Austin Matthews' roof in Phoenix, Arizona. So I don't know how happy Leafs management would be about that. I think Freddie Anderson was throwing, playing alley-oop and dunking on a pool net off the roof from, you know, across his property. So I don't know if that counts as working out. But, a lot of guys are going to stay in shape. Most guys have gyms at their places. I know a couple guys that took off to their cabins, cottage country and went there with their families. But most guys can do things to stay in shape, whether it's, running, cycling at home. A lot of guys have gyms. But at the same time, you can do all that stuff, but nothing can replicate skating. I don't care who you are. I know a couple players do have their own rinks. I've heard of stories of guys skating because their families have arenas on their property. So that's a nice luxury to have, but not every guy does have that option. I think out of all the major sports, hockey has to be the toughest to kind of stay, in-game shape ready, where if you're a basketball, you need a hoop at home to practice your shot. You can run around and do certain drills, and baseball, you can kind of find a way to, keep your arm ready and set to go. But for hockey, skating, I saw some guys were posting on social media how they're rollerblading, but even that's not even close to putting the skates on. So that's going to be kind of interesting. And it looks like the NHL is going to give guys enough time to get back. I'm kind of hearing that 3 weeks to get back into it. And I kind of, lamented on the radio saying, when I was at camp for the last lockout in 13, I messaged a couple guys because I thought it was only a couple days, and Simone was saying, you had 2-3 weeks to get back, but it was apparently only, 3-4 days to get back into shape. But we had been skating on our own, so this situation is a little different because none of the arenas have been available for players. But like I mentioned, to start the show off, I'm curious to see what coaches are going to do to get guys in shape and prepared the quickest, because the coaches are so smart these days, and I'm sure a lot of guys will have a couple things up their sleeve on getting guys back in shape, even if, they're not allowed on the ice with the players to start.
Well, and yeah, how long is long enough in your mind for a training camp? Because, 3 weeks is one of the times we've been heard as being floated, and certainly that would seem like a lot of time. At the same time, I'm sure coaches will have the challenge of keeping the players excited, and 3 straight weeks of practice for some guys might get old pretty quick. So how do you think coaches will have to manage that element of training camp as well?
Yeah, that's, every player is going to be different. A lot of coaches, obviously, they want as much time as they can with guys before a regular training camp to start a season. This is a little bit different. Everyone kind of has their systems in place. I don't think any coaches have been fired since the season stopped in March, but so it's going to be different in that sense, where you're not going to really have to, start fresh with a lot of new faces. Everyone kind of knows the systems. That's not going to be an issue. I think 3 weeks is a little heavy. I think a week would be good enough. 10 days, 2 weeks would be more than sufficient. But there's some guys I played with, fellas, that would, I made sure I was ready for training camp. Like, I was in training camp condition by the time it started, so it was almost easier for me once the conditioning aspect started. I've had guys show up the day before training camp, kind of look over at me and say, "Hey, I wonder what my trainer passed me for the summer," because they haven't opened up their bag. So you have a little bit different of everything. You have guys that skate every day for 2 months, and you get some guys that show up to camp and can just play because they're such freaks of nature and they can just jump right back into training camp in a season.
He is Mike Zygomatis. You can listen to him on the morning show at Fan 590 with Scott MacArthur. Mike, we're excited to have you on and hopefully connect in the future here too.
Yeah, thanks, Bic, Batch. Thanks for having me on. You guys stay healthy and hopefully hockey starts up sooner than later here.
Yep, thanks, Mike.
Absolutely. We are definitely going to be speaking to him again in the future, part of our player trait profiles. In researching this, I didn't realize Mike Zygomatis was ninth in faceoff win percentage.
Yeah.
In NHL, I guess, history, or since they've been tracking the stat.
And that's something we want to get into on this show at some point. Obviously, yeah, we've had a lot of things to talk about this week, but we want to have guys that were specialists at certain parts of the game on and really break down, you know, what made them great. So we're looking forward to have Mike back on at some point in the next few weeks probably and really get into the art of the faceoff with him and how he developed into such a great guy in the draws.
You got about maybe an hour or so before we make our final selections for Game of Take. So text in your thoughts on the tenure of Jim Benning, 650-650, or reach out on Twitter at Batch Hockey, at Bic650. Jim Benning is coming up on the station in about 10 minutes with Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda on Reach Deep here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.